Okay, now my watch is 12:15, and you should be able to see the Moodle front page. I try to avoid jumping around because it causes just extra messy presentation. So, first I would like to apologize. I sent you a message announcements this morning that let's transfer all the lectures from 10 to 12. And then I remember that I have another teaching session tomorrow from tomorrow morning, and even though it's just once, and I we can start to work 10 o'clock the next Friday, and from that on. And if you are not able to attend the contact lectures, the presentations and lectures are going to show appear in the Moodle. something about the structure and introductions. Yesterday, I introduced already the content of the course, and very shortly the assignments. And something you can start already now is this review of scientific article that relates to the contaminated environment, preferably remediation of contaminated environment. And I try to give you some motivation why this new and innovative novel technique should be developed for the soil and environmental remediation, because it's so expensive, and government and business try to encourage to find better and cheaper and more effective techniques. And that is the area where we are carrying out experimental work in our laboratory, this remediation. And if you are not sure that your selected article is the best one, or it's suitable, you can send an email and ask my opinion that if it's okay. Today we are talking about start to talk about the laws and regulations, laws and decree of soil remediation. I hope that you see now my slide. Do you see? Yes or no?
It's still loading. There's a blur screen.
This is this laws and regulation PowerPoint.
Not yet. It's still loading.
Okay. Okay, again. Stop share. I hate this. I really hate. What about now?
Yes, it's in.
Then that is the presentation. Okay, I will stay here and talk about the laws and regulations here in Finland and in the European Union, and also the pressures and drivers and a little bit history of this contaminated environment. This awareness of environmental health and safety and ecosystem services is very, very new idea. And there were no concern of the environmental problems caused by chemicals before, let's say, 60s. The situation with chemicals was the worst after the Second World War, because they call it like a green revolution, use of fertilizers and very, very strong pesticides, uncontrolled use. And then little by little in the beginning of 60s, some person started to put attention and talk about this problem of chemicalization and contamination of environment. And this book by Rachel Carson is some kind of landmark. She's some kind of a model or the first pioneer in the environmental area. She was criticized very heavily. And unfortunately, she died before she learned that she's some kind of like hero. In the mid of 60s, the Swedish scientists developed analytical methods which were able to detect these chemicals from the birds and eggs and fishes. And then little by little, this awareness was increasing, but still lot of problems are among us. This classical case in Japan, contamination of the harbor in city Minamata. I think that they solved the case just a couple of years ago. So there was a lot of really severely affected people and teratogenic effects, and people were very, very sick. Then came Seveso. Seveso was 1976, and that was some kind of the start of the awareness of the chemical problems in the, let's say, in Europe. And based on this incidents, the European Union created this kind of legislation that concerned chemical safety. They were called Seveso Directive, and now there's a second version of the Seveso Directive, Seveso Directive 2. There are classical cases like a Chernobyl in Ukraine. I think you all know of that, and lot of soil in this Ukraine and Belarusia are still contaminated by the radioactive fallout from Chernobyl. Phopal was in the beginning of the 80s, and that was American pesticide factory in India, which didn't take care of any kind of process safety or environmental safety. And there was an explosion, and methyl diisocyanate was spreading in the local slum, and thousands and thousands of people really died. We have also the cases here in Finland. I think that the Kärkölä was the first big one. It was also in the beginning of 80s. There was a local sawmill which has been using these chlorinated phenols for since the 1930s. And the whole village and whole community and the lake and the groundwater were polluted. And as you can see, it was something 1982. And since that, there has been intensive remediation of soil and groundwater projects. But still, the problem is not solved yet. There's this, one article from 2017, and it says that there's some kind of flashback in the remediation project, because you are pumping and pumping and pumping, and you think that you have obtained some positive results, but then when you wait for a while, it seems that the rest of the material is released, and this case in Kärkölä is not closed yet. Then there are very, very well studied cases in Oitti, where this chlorinated solvents of dry cleaning shops were disposing the used solvent, dry tetrachloroethylene, into the soil, which was very typical practice during that time. And then we don't need to go very far. During this course, we can use the case which is located by the campus. There is one big project going on in Nuuskakuja. And we use that as a building material. When I was studied, I started to study environmental hygiene in the end of 70s. There were no awareness, no legislation, no pressures, no drivers for the industry or communities or the disposal of the waste or hazardous waste. And this is a picture taken by me, which is very typical to the industry that time. Those barrels are full of all kind of unknown ingredients of these hazardous waste chemicals. And we were told that the disposal of that kind of hazardous waste is burning it. Let's take this kind of big barrel, put the chemical there and burn it. And if it doesn't burn by itself, use some fuel. Believe or not, that this kind of open burning of hazardous chemical was taught for us, as well as injection of the hazardous liquids to the soil, preferably to the some kind of like peatland. Peatland is excellent for the disposal of hazardous liquids, because they really can absorb big volumes and hold those chemicals in the peat. That was the instructions. And also we were told that when you when you bury hazardous material to the soil, don't put big amount of the hazardous material into the same hole. It's better to spread the hazardous material into the bigger area. And these instructions came directly from the handbook of the disposal of hazardous waste. And that book was produced by the Ministry of, I think it was not the Ministry of Environment, because Ministry of Environment was established 1982. But anyway, and dumping of this waste to the open landfill, and unfortunately also dumping the hazardous material to the lakes and sea. Oceans has been a traditional place for dumping of the hazardous materials, barrels, and also lakes and sea. And I have been working perhaps 15 years ago in Tampere with the case where the local shoe factory, leather factory, dumped for 40 years they had been dumping the leather waste into the local small pond. And actually the pond was full of the residual of leather, full of chromium. So but that was quite legal and normal that time. Very wild practices. And when we are now talking about this thousands of contaminated sites here in Finland, so it's not surprising. And if you have a look this history of the legislation related to the environment, you can see that these tools to control this problem are quite recent. The last one, this Ympäristönsuojelulaki from 2014, is the very powerful tool. It is the background and backbone of all actions related to the contamination or prevention of the contamination, of the remediation of the contamination, but it's very general. So under this environmental pollution law, there are decrees which tells more details and how everything should be done in practice. And we will study this decree tomorrow and Friday very, very, very detailed. And the situation here in Finland is more or less in line with the situation with the other European countries. Everything what is included in our laws and regulations and decrees, they are more or less like similar than in the rest of the Europe. And all the directives have either they are implemented into our own national legislation. There are some international laws which are based on the European Union directive, but not very much in this area of the soil remediation. This Environmental Protection Act is not the only one what relates to the contaminated environment. For example, Waste Act, It relates to the prevention of the generation of hazardous waste and how to avoid the waste and how to handle it, so that it won't cause any harm for the human health or environment. Then comes Water Act, for example, for the protection of the water bodies and water resources, and in the very end, this Chemical Act, it contains very, very many useful tools to control chemicals and the use of the chemicals in different purposes. So very many our students have been found a nice job in the area of chemical legislation and chemical safety in different organizations and in industry. Anyway, the general idea of the legislation in Europe is based on this kind of a level tiered system, but that you don't, since all the resources are limited, you have to start first with the not so heavy machinery, but you start with this tiered system. And it starts with the screening of the potential contaminated cases first by documents, old permits, and maps, and so on. And then if something is noticed and if there is a concern that something might be, then you go to sampling. First, some kind of random screening sampling, and then when it's really a risky case, then you start to do very systematic assessment of the amount and the location of the contaminated material. And it also gives us some kind of tools to assess what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And this relates to this PIMA values, PIMA guidelines, what we are going to study tomorrow. The legislation in all these countries, it's put the pressure of the owner of the problem. It defines who is liable for the contamination, who will pay or compensate, and where to get resources for the prevention or remediation. And this, in all these countries, we have this kind of administrative network and different level of administrators taking care of this system, that this problem is handled from the grassroots level, step by step, up to the top, the ministry. And I will tell a little bit more about who is in charge to do different things in this line of process of assessing of the risks and making the decision of the management, and actually then doing the remediation or prevention, and then and monitoring and follow-up of the progress and results is always included into these permissions and programs. And and these are these steps of the step of the project when there is a concern of the contamination, from starting point up to the implementation of the risk reduction measures. And I would like to also to mention that this monitoring of this performance, like you notice that still after 40 years in Kärkölä, there is the flashback of contamination. So very, very seldom you really can say that this case is closed, particularly if you use techniques which leaves this contaminants on the site. And that's one reason why this excavation of this contaminated soil or pumping of the contaminated groundwater has been so popular, that even though it's very expensive, then you can know that this material is really out of this area and you don't need to worry anymore. And who is in charge who is the actor, the driving force in this business? And it's the Center of Economic Development, Transport and Environment, ELY centers in Finland. I think we have something like 11 of them in Finland. And in many cases, they are doing all the business. There are exceptions, like big cities like Helsinki and Turku. They have so many problems of their own that they it's the municipality that takes care of this permitting and supervision, and they have enough workers and enough capacities and enough problems in their own area. And usually in the soil remediation case, the procedure is not so heavy. You just need to make an announcement and ask a permit. Can I start the remediation? And you have to do that kind of announcement 45 days before you actually start to do anything on the spot. But if your case, this remediation case is a little bit bigger and it relates to the permitting process, and if particularly if you are talking about the directive factories industry, which needs also environmental permit, and the authority that gives this kind of environmental permit, these are regional state administrative agencies, AVIs, and they are a little bit less than ELY centers. So AVI in Finland gives the permits, and ELY centers do the supervision. And it is these ELY centers which are responsible to do the monitoring and gives the permit and takes care that everything is according to the instructions and the paperwork, what is required. There are forms and plans what are required, and you will become familiar with this kind of paperwork and permits, which are submitted to ELY centers, and then ELY centers gives you feedback whether your plan is acceptable or should you do some improvement. So, and also if this contaminated area site, if nothing happens, and they have a power to start the remediation by themselves and start the actions and hire a company to do the remediation if this owner of the problem is not active by himself. And then if you have laws and regulation and permits, and then if there is a monitoring and so on, nothing would happen without this kind of penalties. You have to have this negative pressure. Stick and carrots, but also stick. And the possibilities of the authorities are first to talk nicely, usually that's enough. And then after talking nicely, talking a little bit less nicely and give the instructions, and it doesn't help, they have authority and they can stop the actions, keskeyttäminen, interruption of the activity, if it's not okay. Then there are penalties and payments and compensations. So money can be involved also here. And in Finland, we already have a couple of cases where this punishment is, I think that somebody has already been in a prison because of some kind of illegal actions related to the contamination of environment, but not so many. And then ELY-keskus has also this possibility to hire external consultant to do this teettämisuhka. So that is also one of the tools to push a little bit this projects. And where to put the blame? And in principle and according to law, it is the polluter who is responsible. And they have to restore the polluted soil or groundwater to the condition which is not harm, it doesn't put harm to health or the environment. And where is the line? How clean is clean enough is told by this BIMA guidelines. Then in reality, sometimes it's very difficult to know who is actually the polluter. And many of these cases are really historic. The pollution can come from the very beginning of the last millennium. So, and there has been several owners, for example, on this plant or area. And so actually, who is in the end going to pay. And this polluter pays is valid if the pollution has taken after 1994. But something what has happened before that, if you don't know who has been the polluter and who has caused the problem, we are talking about these orphan cases, cases with no owner, or this owner. The present owner is so poor, and it's not fair to put the blame to the recent owner. There are possibilities to do some kind of compensation and sharing the remediation costs. And I know cases, for example, in Tampere, that the city has been very, very soft and very, very supportive. And particularly when there has been, Tampere is a full of contaminated old industrial sites. And then there are a lot of and the sites are located in the very, very middle of the city and by the lake. So this negotiation with this kind of estate developer, the company who starts to develop these residential areas can for example get the area almost free of charge if they promise that before they build the house, they will clean the soil. For example, you most of you know Jyväskylä quite well, and one of the nicest places is Lutakko. But Lutakko hasn't been that nice for, let's say, 20, 30 years ago. It was old industrial polluted area, but because of there are demand of the land, and there were constructors and developers who were able to build nice fancy houses by the lake, hotels, restaurants, so on, to transfer the cost of this soil remediation to the price of the house is very, very reasonable. All I would say it's almost peanuts compared to the price of the house itself. Okay, and about the situation here in Finland and in Europe, I told that we have at least 25,000 site which might be contaminated, and some are severely contaminated, some are just like under survey, and some of them are quite harmless. But the situation is even worse in other countries. This central European countries with old industry, with the industry like mining industry, petrochemical industry, coal industry, and they have had this industry for hundreds of years, so this situation is much worse. There might be even like 2.5 million cases of soil contamination, and even more than that. And the amount of the cases, the sites are huge, and it is estimated that we just know half of them, and from the known cases, just some part is have been remediated. And this is a map, and the darker the blue is, the more there are contaminated cases. The countries which are spending most money per capita in Europe is Estonia. And of course, then come Belgium, Netherlands, France, Germany. This awareness of the soil contamination and soil remediation is not very, it doesn't have very long history. I remember when I was studying that my colleagues and my peers were studying, started to screen the possible contaminated cases in Finland, but that was just a screening. And then in the end of the 90s, in the beginning of 2000, there was a big boom of the soil remediation cases, and during those years around 2000, all the simple and small and easy cases have been solved. And the amount of the cases has declined within the years, but it depends that there are less money available coming from the government, and then the cases what exists are more difficult, more expensive, some even impossible. So, but still. There are activity in this area, and this is a Finnish picture, but I have tried to translate what has been the reason for soil remediation case. And absolutely the most common is this, the change of land use. So, and that means that the old industrial areas have been transformed for the residential use. And it can't be done without the without guaranteeing that the soil is clean enough. Then there are also some cases where the remediation of the soil or ground was based on the health. For example, Kärkölä. The remediation of the groundwater in Kärkölä is based on the fact that if you drink that water, you are exposed to the concentration of chlorinated phenols, which might have caused several extra cancer cases in the Kärkölä municipality. This project Soili and Jaska, cases are old gas stations, and Finnish oil and gas companies have made a deal that they take a couple of cents per every liter or cubic meter of gas and put it aside and use that money for the cleaning of these old gas stations. Then the other reasons of, for example, yes, if there has been some activity going on and the soil has been contaminated, you have to clean afterwards your residual waste material from the site. Okay. Then about risk management. Why we do this kind of very expensive activity, dig and wash and clean the soil or groundwater? Because we have people living there, working there. We have workers, we have animals, and so on. And the exposure of those target organisms to the contaminants which are attached to the soil particles are in the drinking water, or it's accumulated into the vegetables and mushrooms and berries or fishes. So to control this health and environmental risk to acceptable level. And this acceptable level, and how to define the acceptable level. So we have a nice annex in the decree of PIMA decree. There are values, but where the values are coming from, and yeah, where that is going to be the topic of the lectures for tomorrow and Friday. There is a very transparent way to calculate the risks, and all the authorities and problem owners are loving the PIMA guideline values, because it's so nice to say that okay, this is based on this Bible annex of PIMA decree, but it's not always a sensible approach. And then we try to introduce the aspect of and method of the risk-based remediation of contaminated environment. Sometimes you don't need to follow the very strict guidelines. But sometimes the level of the environmental contamination should be lower that the concentration what is allowed by the decree. But that's for tomorrow and for Friday. This risk management can be done by technological methods. Usually 90% of the remediation cases in Finland is digging, removing the contaminated soil somewhere and dumping, or pump the water and drink it. For example, in Jyväskylä, in Keljonniemi, there was a small local groundwater reservoir which was very important for the water supply of that part of the city of Jyväskylä. They noticed that it was contaminated by chlorinated solvents. But because Jyväskylä needed drinking water so desperately, so they constructed a treatment of this polluted groundwater. And again, the people in that area, in Keljonkangas, they are drinking this contaminated groundwater, but after purification, because purifying the groundwater for drinking purposes is cheaper than to make drinking water from the lake water from Tuomiojärvi or in Lauka artificial groundwater research area. Then comes this prevention of the spreading of the contaminants, or by limiting the exposure of this exposure of the people, workers, for example, restricting access to the area, building fences, building isolating layers, impermeable layers, which prevents, for example, the evaporation of chlorinated solvents from the soils, so that the people don't expose to these solvents by inhalation. And in the very end, there is that limiting the exposure to the substances through land use planning, that is probably the most sensitive and sensible option to avoid the problems, to screen the contaminated areas and don't touch them, or allocate this area for the residential purposes, because residential purpose means that the soil has to be really, really clean. But if you put a parking area or football field or some golf course or whatever with less sensitive exposure scenario, it's okay. Okay. Okay, it goes back to the basics of this whole remediation business. That's its Environmental Protection Act, and it has absolutely banned the contamination of soil and particularly groundwater, but it has occurred. And there come this priority principle, which is common to all the environmental areas. It's first, the best is prevention, then minimization of the impacts, and then in the very, very end, to do the cleaning or risk control. And if we open the big Environmental Protection Act, it's like an umbrella. Everything is under this umbrella. It puts everything under the same approach. It integrates the air pollution, soil pollution, water pollution, noise pollution, and thermal pollution. And there are different sections, the gala, which are behind the whole business of environmental protection and remediation. Starting from the 7th and 8th, prohibition of the pollution of the soil and groundwater. Then much later, due to treat the soil and groundwater in this order. And then section 78, this gives the power and defines in detail how it is done, because law is too robust, law is too big, too slow, and it says that more instructions can be given by decrees and guidelines. And according to this section 78, the power has given for the environmental centers, this is because government want to avoid bureaucracy. They want to make this remediation case and processing of permits as smooth as possible. So in 90% of the cases, this kind of notification to the authorities and ELY centers, kunnostusilmoitus, we are practicing to make one in our case. That is enough. And as a part of this evaluation of your notification of the action, the people in environmental center evaluates that your technique is suitable and your plans are realistic, and probably you are going to achieve this level what is required by BIMA decree. This Environmental Protection Act also mentioned in the end that in remediation of contaminated environment, best available technologies should be used. But this process of defining the best available technologies for soil remediation is still not very, very, very common. There are a lot of industries like paper and pulp industry and so on, where the permit is based totally on the PAT documents. An Äänekoski paper and pulp mill or Äänekoski bio factory was the first case in Finland which was permitted by this best available technology approach. But from the now on, new permits, and if there's a renewal of environmental permits, they are done according to the best available technology assessment. Okay, and as I told you, the authority in charge, the local ELY centers, and in the bigger cases where this environmental permitting is applied, then the responsibility is in regional state administrative agency. And Helsinki and Turku are exceptions. Then this is the content of tomorrow. So we will go through this Bima decree, government decree of on assessment of soil contamination and remediation needs. This is really important decree, and fortunately we have several booklets, booklets available in internet, produced by Ministry of Environmental and Finnish Environmental Research Center, SYKE. And I am going to use those documents in the teaching, and we will go through those documents very carefully. And we haven't mentioned name of any possible contaminant, but when we start to study the decree, BIMA decree, then we have to name the compound X, and then we will have a look from the annex what is the threshold value, kynnysarvo, for that chemical. And if higher concentrations occur in that area, more studies are needed. And then after that, sampling is carried out, and drilling and pumping and groundwater monitoring, and then it starts to cost quite a lot of money, and after, based on those more detailed measurements, the decision is made whether remediation is needed or not. And there are so-called upper guideline values for the soil for each compound, which is meant for the residential purposes. People are living there, children are eating soil, people are growing vegetables, the lower of guideline level is for those people, and upper guideline level is less sensitive use, industrial use, parking areas, and so on. So there are two guideline levels, and they are based on the calculation of the acceptable risk. And we will have a look through the process of calculation of couple of example chemicals, but then we would like to learn to calculate the risk by ourselves, because we want to do the risk-based remediation and take into account all possible parameters that might affect to the risk. Is the risk lower or higher than what is done by assuming that we fix all these scenarios for one value. This BIMA values, they are meant only for soil. They are not suitable for the assessing the quality of the sediments. That's the very, very problematic media, and not for contamination of the groundwater. But fortunately, we have drinking water guidelines what can be used, and then take this drinking water guideline and put a little bit extra safety factor, and give a concentration for the use of the drinking water. Most of these environmental these guideline levels are based on ecotoxicological values. And for metals and for some compounds, the endpoint is based on the human health effect. If you have a look this list of annex of these compounds and the guideline levels, it will indicate whether this figure is coming from the health risk assessment or ecotoxicological risk assessment. And I would say that there are more guideline values which are based on the ecotoxicological risks. For example, I have been working with the contamination of polluted groundwater in Oitti. And the goal of remediation was based on the ecotoxicological values, because drinking water concentration for trichloroethylene and tetrachloroethylene were higher than what was allowed for the Daphnia magna and salmon and whatever they are. So the ecotoxicological values were much more strict than the health-based values. Yes. And yeah, before we received these marvelous PIMA guidelines, I think it was 2007, before that we were using the Samase guidelines. And before Samase guidelines, when I started in the business, when we had to make the decision whether the soil is contaminated or not, we used some data and documents from Netherlands. Netherlands were the first in Europe who started to publish this kind of guidelines values. And everybody was very happy that, may I borrow that? Because they were first in that area. Then came these US values. There's US EPA Environmental Agency, and they have this marvelous, very, very extensive database for all compounds and chemicals, but they have little details and differences in the calculation of the risk. So you can't use so directly these values coming from US EPA. So at least you have to take it into account a couple of minor things in the calculus. Okay. This is the exact name for the PIMA decree. And the PIMA project, it's not meant that you are able to see it or read it. Just motivate you to what is coming, because we are more or less going through this process and different steps of this, how this PIMA project start from the possible contaminated soil via this process, assessment process, and the risk management process up to the end of the acceptable goal, and then coming to the monitoring phase did the project obtain the goals and whether this is like a permanent situation. Okay. Something about the money. I already mentioned that we are talking about very expensive operations and the market. It means that big consultant companies has found that this is a lucrative business, and big international companies like Dora Nova from, I think it's from Denmark, then comes Coder, it's come from Canada, Sweco, I think it's from Sweden. Those big multinational companies has more or less taken over this soil remediation assessment and remediation business in Finland. Some very small companies exist, like Dora Nova. I will do in future also work with the Dora Nova, which is a small company in Vesilahti, close to Tampere, but they have been on the business since 1995, which means that first in Finland. Okay, then about the use of the resources coming from the oil funding, and you can see that it was about in the beginning of 2000 when the activity was highest, and it was this soil project which was practically carrying remediation in every community in Finland, because every community had their gas station pump, and it was located by the sensitive groundwater area. But those cases are more or less now handled already. Okay. That was the introduction for tomorrow's lecture, and then something about why the government is doing that, and the government, the previous government, when the prime minister was Sipilä, yeah. Sipilä was, they were very, very excited about this possibility to the circular economy. And a lot of money was used for different kind of programs, and how they created some kind of strategy and tools and provided resources and allocated tasks for different actors in Finland, how to approach the good state of soil in Finland by 2040. I will translate this later on, but this was the goal of this paper produced by the government. And there was this kind of national investigation and remediation program funded by this project. And it started from the identification of possible existing site, calculate the last ones, and try to develop risk assessment methods for the better decision making, in order not to waste money for extra safe safety marginal project. And in the technology area, they promote the development of cost efficient, safe methods using natural resources, and while doing that, to create more job and business into the area of environmental remediation. And I have taken this paper too seriously. I have really devoted a lot of time to push the development of some project, and for sure by teaching and promoting this assessment of the treatment and improvement of technologies. A couple of years ago, there was a big project, demonstration project, which was supervised by Pirkanmaa ELY Center, that they gave money for the demonstration projects. And safer, some easier, some alternative, some innovative technologies were demonstrated, but still the problem owner user or user of the soil, they still prefer this soil excavation and zero residual risk. What we are doing at the moment in the basement of our university ambiotical laboratory, we are dreaming and trying to wash the residual contaminants from the excavated soil to the level that it is below PIMA value. And this material, what we have a huge amount of piles all over the Finland, the contaminated soil, we could turn it to clean soil, which can be used in constructions and make some profitable business from that activity. And then this, let's say 5 to 7 years ago, this clean tech idea, clean tech ideology was very, very hot. But now the governmental and international funding is a little bit shifting from this area into the prevention of the climate change. But still, we still have this problem among us. And yes, there are people who are working with this lean tech research, lean tech teaching, lean tech business. And yeah, and there is this, if you want to learn more, you can download this document, and not that document, it's just a previous document. This document is another one. this is related to the permitting of different activities. If they are called directive industrial activities. And when you practice this kind of business and you want to get a permit, you have to do this kind of baseline risk screening before you get the permit to your activity. Most of these cases are big industry, metal industry, mining industry, petrochemical industry, paper and pulp industry, and so on, but also big animal farms and aquaculture might be under this obligation to apply this environmental permit, and then the applicant needs to consider this process also.